This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Wednesday morning, everybody. It's hump day, and I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for June 8th, episode 1446, brought to you by Back on Track Products. Good morning, horse people.
That's right. It's Ghostbusters Day, everybody. One month till the opening of the new one.
Gosh, I was wondering why you were playing this, but like, this is... Can I ask you a question? Have you ever... Could you name the singer of this song if you didn't have it right in front of you?
No, I have no idea who that was.
That's because Ray Parker Jr. never had to write another song ever again. Yeah, guy bought an island.
He did pretty well. That song was number one for 3 weeks after the movie came out.
But that is the most recognizable. Oh my gosh, like that song right there. Have you ever heard of Ray Parker Jr. being on tour?
No.
Yeah.
I have no idea who Ray Parker Jr. is. I didn't even know till today who wrote the song.
I'm going to Google that right now and just see where on earth Ray Parker Jr. is right now. Because right, bless his heart, he's fine.
You know, it's Ghostbusters Day because today, in theaters all across the country, here in Ocala too, they're doing showings of the original Ghostbusters in the theater. Now, it's at 7 o'clock tonight here in Ocala. I'm hoping that we can get there. But, you know, I've seen that movie about 1,000 times. But seeing it in the theater, I think, would be so cool again.
Really, yeah. Would.
I have, my dad wasn't much of a TV guy and wasn't much of a movie guy. I can remember going to two movies with him because this came out, believe it or not, in 1984. And I went to two movies with him. One was 2001 Space Odyssey because he wanted to see it. And I was probably in high school and I think I fell asleep. And then I bugged him to go see Ghostbusters because I thought he'd like it. And so that's one of the two movies I ever remember seeing with my dad was Ghostbusters.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, everybody has those kind of memories about, there's certain things in your life that you have those kind of memories about. And I think Ghostbusters for people is one. Star Trek, Star Wars, maybe. Star Wars probably more than Star Trek, and Ghostbusters are those that people have it about.
Really?
So Ray Parker, whatever happened to him?
Did you know that Huey Lewis actually sued Ray Parker Jr., stating that the melody to Ghostbusters infringed on the copyright of Huey Lewis and the News song, I Want a New Drug, that had been released the previous year? The two parties reached a settlement in 1995, which, that's a lot, 84 he got sued. They reached the settlement in 95, which banned either party from revealing any information that was not included in a joint press release issued at the time. So they were in court for 11 years. In March 2001, Parker filed a suit against Lewis for breaching part of that settlement because apparently Lewis like talked about it publicly. So I'm going to wager a guess that poor Ray Parker Jr. is just that. Poor.
Probably broke.
Because he is currently on tour. Let's see. It says Ray Parker Jr. enjoys spending time with his family while continuing his love for music. And he's playing like at a, oh gosh, I don't want to tell you. He's playing at like a little sushi bar this weekend.
Poor Ray Parker.
Oh, Ray Parker Jr. If you're in San Francisco this weekend, go to Yoshi's. I think that's a sushi bar.
Poor Poor Ray. You know, this this film, Dan Aykroyd was the one who wrote it, and he truly believes in ghosts. And that's why he wrote Ghostbusters, because he didn't think it was right for skeptics to dismiss the paranormal, because he believed in it. And it's one of the reasons he wrote it. But Chevy Chase and Michael Keaton both turned down the role of Dr. Peter Venkman. That's Bill Murray's role. They both turned that role down. Eddie Murphy and John Candy both turned down main roles in the movie.
Wow.
Eddie Murphy said when he read the script, he thought it was the stupidest thing he'd ever seen.
Are you serious?
Yes. So, and it was kind of really stupid if you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's really stupid. Like, oh, there's a ghost attacking. We have to put them in these cages and somebody lets them out. And we have to start. Yeah, I doubt that Eddie Murphy.
Oh, we're
going to
make
though.
A car out of an ambulance, you know, an old ambulance, which what it was, actually. It was an old ambulance and they made it.
Oh, it's not a hearse.
No, it was a hearse. You're right. It was an old hearse and they it was painted black when they got it. They found it in a junkyard. And they,
is this real life?
Yeah, this is real life. They found it in a junkyard and it was painted black and they weren't sure, you know, the black didn't work. They actually started filming the movie with it painted black and nothing on it, because they thought, you know, the whole hearse thing was kind of funny. But the problem was the visual director came back and said the hearse is getting lost, you know, because it just doesn't pop. So that's when they changed it all around and they painted it white and they put the bubble on the top and the whole thing. That's when they switched it around, was the visual director said, this isn't working.
Huh.
Now, there's something fun happening tonight. I'm not a Jimmy Kimmel Live person. We mostly watch The Tonight Show. But all the cast members, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, Annie Potts, will join Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Kate McKinnon, and Leslie Jones all on Jimmy Kimmel Live tonight. So
wow.
That's one you're going to want a DVR.
You know what? I'm going to call them and say they need to put dang Ray Parker Jr. on that show.
Yes.
We want more Ray Parker Jr. Bless his heart.
So that'll be on tonight. So be sure to, I just set that to record.
I can't believe those people turned down roles. You've got to be like, wow, that was like the biggest movie moneymaker like in history.
It was. It was the highest grossing comedy of all time until the release of Home Alone. It had made $240 million domestically, which is equal to $580 million and over $1 billion internationally until Home Alone came out. So it was the highest grossing movie of all time. You know, one of our favorite parts of going to the parks here in Ocala or in Orlando was going to the Ghostbusters thing.
Yeah.
It's just so cool.
Man, I used to be like Eddie Murphy. Those guys were like, dang, should have taken that role.
And not that they didn't do well anyway, but well, you know, Chevy Chase was also in the SNL days. This was all, and by the way, about 50% of this movie was ad-libbed. And I think it's because Bill Murray can't follow a script, but they said it was ad-libbed because all these guys worked together in Second City in Chicago, and they all worked together on SNL. So they were all improv comedians anyway.
He's got to have written down the part where he was like, my girlfriend is a dog. That was one of my favorite lines. Sorry.
The marshmallow goo that explodes after they shoot the marshmallow man was 50 pounds of shaving cream. How much does it take to make 50 pounds of shaving cream? By the way. Yep.
And the state, how much the state puff, it says here the state puff marshmallow man suit cost $20,000 each.
And
now,
they made a lot of them, actually.
The giant state puff marshmallow
man? Yeah, by the way, the giant state puff marshmallow suit was the size of a guy, and there was a guy in it. And they built miniature buildings, and that's how they found
them. Oh, you're hurting my brain right now. It did not.
And that was designed.
Really New York.
Oh, and that was, of course, designed after this, you know, that the Stay Puft guy, what was his name? Pillsbury Doughboy. And the reason that they did the miniatures was Dan Aykroyd was also into the old Japanese Godzilla and Ultraman and all those where they made it and they made models to do it. To for each of those shows, which we used to watch as a kid. And that's why he ended up doing it that way, because he loved those so much.
I love Dan Aykroyd. He's great. All right. Well, you totally sound like Cliff Clavin about the Ghostbusters. I can tell you're excited. I can't wait for the next one, because I love Melissa McCarthy. Like, she's I'm pretty sure we would be my best friends if we ever met.
Well, you want to hear one of the trailers for the new one?
Yes.
Coming out when? July?
July 15th.
July 15th, okay. We'll have to have it a watch will haunt party.
You every night.
Listen.
Whatever they are, no one should have to encounter that kind of evil. Except you girls. I think you can handle it.
Oh, all good. Thanks.
Somebody is trying to unleash the dead on New York City, and we may be the only ones who can save it.
Why am I operating the untested nuclear laser?
You have the longest arms.
Fire!
Oh, well. These women are just sad.
I'm sure she just misspoke.
Sad, bored, lonely, sad women.
Oh.
Hello. I'm here at the receptionist job.
Hi. You're hired.
God, you're all sweaty. There are people out there that need our help.
Okay, I got it. We need to form a group and build something to fight these damn ghosts.
That's exactly what we already do here.
Oh, we're the Ghostbusters!
Something big is going to happen.
I think the word we're looking for is apocalypse.
I will kick the unliving crap out of you! And you, especially you!
We don't want mass hysteria.
Get out of the city! Get out of the city!
Kevin, can you answer the phone?
I can't. It's in the fish tank.
The one on the desk.
Oh, that one. What's the place called again?
Conductors of the Metaphysical Examination.
Got it. Ghostbusters.
Patty! Don't move!
You got a...
No, I'm tired.
No.
Listen. I'm just going to go ahead and take off. How about that?
I don't really think that's a good idea.
No. Going to take off. Don't... upset the ghost. Really?
Oh my God, I'm so excited. And the addition of Thor as a receptionist.
Yes. Oh. I love him when he does comedy, actually. He's good at comedy because he's so deadpan. He's so good at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good. I can't wait.
I love him shirtless. They've got to have him shirtless at some point, right?
They had him all dressed up as a receptionist, like a coat and tie. Now, do you remember, now, in 1984, they had no CGI. So it's going to be a completely different movie this time. Everything, you know, was done the old-fashioned way back in 1984.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be great.
All right, sorry I'm geeking out, but it's Wednesday.
Let's talk about horses. Jennifer. Horses. Save us. What's coming up on today's show? Because Glenn, you know.
Coming up on today's Back on Track Crappiest Wednesday edition, as the opening credits roll, we've got a horse health segment featuring Q&A with Dr. Barrett from Haggard Equine, and she's going to answer some questions about lameness. And then in the middle of the show, we've got assorted horsey headlines and crazy lists filled with in the fluffy center. And in the third half of the show, Horses in History visits the White House.
Thank you, Jennifer. All right.
Oh my God, move on.
Wasn't done yet. I want to give one of these.
Happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday to you.
I have to give Gina Moronic a happy birthday today. She's one of our auditors. And also a happy anniversary. I saw it was her anniversary yesterday. I think it was 2 years. I'm guessing at that. But I saw her post that on Facebook yesterday. So that's pretty cool. And we also had another one of our auditors had an anniversary yesterday. But in typical Facebook fashion, I went to look for it today. Couldn't find it.
So whoever
that was. Happy anniversary. Also, we have some brand new auditors in the last 2 days. We have Kara, Sandy, and Michelle. Welcome to all of you. If you're not part of the auditors page yet, go to HRN Auditors on Facebook and request to enter the sanctum, and we'll let you in. Also, I think that's it. Your turn.
My turn. Enough. Okay, this is going to be a lesson for all of us. I would like to apologize to my best friend, Thor. The horse, Thor. Thor the Mustang.
Not the superhero.
No.
We were just talking about Thor, and it was just confusing.
I know, he needs no apology, that one. But my Mustang, Thor, I would like to give you a public apology. So I've been riding him, you know, jumping him a little bit and doing some dressage with him, and just the last two rides when I would go to, and Jennifer, you can listen to this because you'll actually have a response. Like Glenn, when you go pick up the right rein, like going to the left, he was beautiful, amazing, soft, supple. Pick up that left rein, he would give, and he was like forward and nice and happy. And then I would pick up the right rein. And just in the last two times, my gosh, stiff, heavy, not wanting to turn, bolting again, which the bolting thing was,
uh-oh,
I thought was in the past. You know, I'm like, you son of a gun. I'm like, okay, well, we're going to do small circles until you can be soft. And I don't know why you're running away with me and don't be bolting with me. And I'm going to, you just turn, you, I will pick up that rein and you will give to it. You know, like that kind of thing. And it, the last two rides have been pretty unpleasant. I'm like, why are you running away with me again? About halfway, well, at the end of the second ride, I stopped, we halted, and he just like took this deep breath. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's something wrong with you, isn't there? There's something. Oh my God. And then you like want to cry. They're like, I'm like, there's something wrong with this horse. So I had the vet out yesterday, as you know, just one of those things. By God, if your horse is doing something well and then all of a sudden won't do that thing, listen to your horse. They're trying to tell you something. So I had him scan for acupuncture scan, which is where they kind of like check all his acupuncture points and see how he is. And he was like, totally negative to everything. He was totally fine. So I'm like, all right, look, check his teeth. And, you know, they're not able to really get all the way up in the back when they're just checking the teeth. But she's like, he's got a couple points. And, you know, maybe I'll just get up in there and see, like, you know, I'll give him like a half floating, you know, and just kind of like round everything out. And because his teeth were really bad a year ago. And I wanted to, he was due anyway with some points. So I said, okay, do that. So she sedates him. She puts his head up on the stand and she's feeling around. She's like, I don't know what your problem is. I don't know. There's some points. Oh my God. I found your problem. And I was like, what? I stuck. She let me put my hand all the way up in Thor's mouth. And it was one of those moments where you like instantly want to cry. With running my hand up the right side of his teeth, there was just flat tooth, spike. A part of his tooth had grown straight up, and it was about the size of my thumb tip, pointing straight up.
Wow.
Different than all of the teeth. And she goes, every time you pick up the right rein, that was jabbing him in the cheek. Because it was on the left side, and every time you pick up your right rein, and he had this huge sore in his gums. Oh, I'm about to cry even talking about it. I feel so bad. Because, like, it only took me two rides, but, like, I should have listened to him. He does not say no. He does not complain. And this was, like, such a lesson to me. File that sucker down, and he should be feeling a lot better. But I just wanted to publicly apologize to Thor the horse and let everybody know how important it is to listen to your animal.
You know,
Jamie.
What? Only two rides. You know, my neighbor booked an appointment. My neighbor goes, hey, can I share that trip charge with you? Because my horse is losing weight. I think he needs his teeth done. And I was like, yeah, sure. She'll float his teeth too. I was like, well, when was the last time? Well, we've had him 5 years and we've never done it. Okay. So two rides. I forgive myself, so
Was there a tooth on the top that didn't match it, or any clue as to why that one went rogue?
She had a rogue tooth. She's like, he's young. He hasn't had his teeth done ever, except for, you know, last year. She was like, and the ramps and the hooks are so bad on him that it just, it just kind of grew unopposed back there. And it was really bad. I mean, it was pretty bad.
Poor, and like, you have to tranquilize him out of curiosity.
I, unlike you, do not believe in putting horses in under the stress of having their teeth floated without tranquilization. Oh. I don't want my horse to have
TMJ. Well, I thought you would have, especially with the Mustang.
But. Yeah, no, he was pretty drugged. I feel like I mean, I've never used your your teeth floating guy who does it without sedation,
Our teeth whisperer.
Yeah, your teeth whisperer, but I've never, I mean, oh my gosh, I'd want to be sedated. Somebody's filing that thing. I want to be sedated for teeth cleaning. So, yeah. We sedated Thor.
Oh, by the way, Rosie chimed in and said, tell Jamie I'm glad she said that on air because I've always tried to listen to my horse, even when others tell me nothing's wrong or he's just got my number. Now, in my case, I think Scooter's just got my number. So,
yeah, definitely. Scooter
See,
has
I
your
think
number.
Those rules, that rule you just said, goes out the window with ponies. I think ponies are the exception to the rule.
Yeah, that could be true. But no, it just that like minor amount of communication that he was trying to tell me something, and I didn't.
It hurts,
me,
mommy. I thought you were going to tell me he had something with his back or his foot. You
know, no, that's why I did the acupuncture. I'm like, there's something going on. And I mean, initially I did think teeth and I was like, okay, it's been a year since he's been floated. But, you know, some horses can go longer than a year. But his were bad enough.
Or 5 years.
Like, you know what? Or 5 years. Yeah. And you know what? He's probably due. And, da, 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 and you know, and it just convinced myself that there was something wrong because he just like Chad said last night when I was telling him about it and I was like crying because I felt so bad. He's like, yeah, he goes, that's the kind of horse that's not going to lie to you. You know, I mean, yeah. Horses don't lie in general, but he was like, he's not a complainer. So if there's all of a sudden something going on, then you need to listen to it. And that's what my husband gets pissed about vet bills.
Scooter is a complainer.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, see, he's the one that cries wolf.
Everything is high drama for Scooter. Oh, my goodness, a fly is on my ear. Oh, my gosh, I'm going to die. My butt itches. Oh, my gosh, I'm going to die. There's a crack in my hoof. Yeah, everything's drama
for
Scooter.
See, I think that is a problem. If you get a horse that's crying wolf all the time, that's when you get in trouble, right? I mean, Thor's just the opposite of that. He doesn't cry wolf, so you were able to pick it up.
Yeah, he's pretty stoic guy. So, you know, there are horses. Remember, horses don't lie. They just may be overdramatic sometimes.
There are drama queens. I don't know if they don't lie, but there are drama queens in the horse world.
Yes.
Yeah.
I happen to own one. I have a moral dilemma for you before we get to our first guest. And I found this article today in the Star Tribune, which is up in Idaho. And this was a story out of Idaho Falls. And I want all the listeners to answer this. And I think we all know what Jamie's answer would be. But I want to tell you the whole story before you rush to judgment, because I rushed to judgment when I read the article until I read the response.
You need to just read the article as it's written and then read her response.
I will. The Bureau of Land Management has fined an Idaho woman who attempted to rescue an emaciated wild horse. The Post Register reports the BLM fined Cynthia Stotzer, $275 for attempting to move the animal she encountered while riding her horse in Utah in April. Stotzer said she felt compelled to follow her heart, so she loaded the Mustang into her horse trailer and took it to the Best Friends Animal Society. BLM took the horse back the next day and brought it to its ranch in Utah. Idaho BLM Wild Horse and Burro lead Chris Robbins says the agency typically sends a veterinarian to examine a sick animal in its natural environment. He said removing an animal is dangerous and could interfere with the ecosystem. Now, the lady responded to the article and said, I'm sorry, the rewriting of this story made it so watered down that it lost sight of its most compelling aspects. It was a very small horse, severely emaciated, right off the interstate in a heavily camped-in area, which it had been begging from people. It attempted to get into the back of my truck to get water. Horse people had been camping there and had left hay, thus habituating it. I tried to call the BLM for days, but finally decided as the weekend approached to put the horse in my trailer and take it to the biggest and arguably the best animal sanctuary in the country. There was nothing whatsoever dangerous about this particular very passive weak horse. I understand the Idaho BLM spokesman's larger concerns, but he had no knowledge of this specific case. The BLM also came and moved this horse despite its acceptance at the sanctuary and the pleas of the staff to leave her there until she was at least strong enough to travel. And guess what? The BLM itself engages in removing starving horses from their range. Last summer, they removed 30 starving horses from Nevada to that same facility overcrowded with 170 horses on the barren plain. There's a lot more to talk about here than the simplistic way it's being presented. So now that you got both sides of the story, what would you have done? You called the BLM. They did not respond. They didn't care.
Reading it again, she called the BLM for days, but she was probably there on a weekend, you know, and calling the office. She got there Friday, saw it on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So calling the BLM during the weekend, probably not. That's the only argument for the BLM.
All right, let's say she did get a hold of them and they just weren't coming out. You called and called and called and they weren't coming out. For the sake of this, just to what would you do? Moral dilemma.
Well, I think we would have done what all of us would have done. You got an emaciated horse that's starving right off the interstate. Yeah, we're going to all of it. If a BLM wild horse is willing to jump into my trailer.
I know. That's what I was thinking.
Like, that's where I was like, this girl probably just changed it up into the trailer. No, it's not. I'm like, how does one get a wild horse to jump into a tiny black box?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hungry.
And
it's
she didn't really take hungry. It home either. She brought it to the rescue, which I think was the right move on her part. She brought it to the rescue, and then, you know, rescue was willing to take care of it. And obviously somebody notified the BLM after she did, or that's part's missing in the story. Somebody notified them that the horse was there, either the rescue did or she did. You know, and I understand that, you know, they're looking at it as a government agency. We can't let people do this. So we can't, you know, we can't let the rescue even keep this horse. We have to take it back, put it with the rest of the horses. I mean, I get all that. But, you know, it is a moral dilemma. I don't know. Jennifer might have done the same thing. I don't know if I would have called a couple more days or if I would have just done it.
I don't know. I mean, I probably would have just done it. Especially, you know what? I mean, calling the BLM was not the right answer. Calling a animal control place was probably a better answer. You know what I mean? Right. So
that might have been, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the fact that the animal had been habituated to human contact and had learned to become dependent upon food and water, at least to some degree, it was unlikely that that horse was going to figure it out. I mean, you know, it's just, I think I would have done the same thing. I think so.
Yeah. All of us would have. Yeah. We would all put that, you know, if you can't get some, if nobody's going to help, I'm going to help.
Right. Because it still comes down to, you know, the animal needs to be helped. That's what it's come down to, right? I mean, the bottom line is the animals still need to be helped. So there you go. Well, I just thought that was an interesting article and an interesting dilemma to be put in front of somebody who probably didn't want that dilemma that weekend. She probably didn't need that in her life that weekend.
No, and now she's got a $275 fine and her heart hurts because she just watched this little horse she saved be trucked off to a holding facility to stand in the dang sun or snow up in Idaho Falls and nothing she can do about it.
Yeah.
That sucks. I want to adopt it.
I knew I shouldn't have brought this story up because I knew that would be the next thing.
I'm going to make another trip to Idaho Falls and come back with a poobie.
That's funny. Well, let's hear from our sponsor, Back on Track, about their Hawk boots. And then we're coming back with the Horse Health Report. And we're going to talk a little bit about lameness today.
Hello, I'm Emily Reynolds, a professional mounted shooter from Western New York, and I'm here today to talk to you about Back on Track Hawk boots. This is my 21-year-old gelding that keeps up with the ladies' fours in cowboy mounted shooting, and it's thanks to Back on Track Hawk boots keeping him sound and happy. The Back on Track therapeutic hawk boots have a durable neoprene outer shell and ceramic infused material on the inside called Weltex. This material in the hawk boot reflects the horse's body warmth to help stimulate blood circulation. The increased blood circulation may help to alleviate swelling and soreness, making the hock joint move more freely. By increasing circulation and decreasing inflammation, your horse's hock joints will be able to move more freely and without pain. The boot fastens around the hock, but leaves the hock point uncovered. The attached Velcro straps allow you to adjust the boot's fit. We use them before and after exercise. Back on Track, therapeutic comfort at its best. Ask for it by name.
It's time for the Horses in the Morning Horse Health Report, when our intrepid hosts, together with an unlucky member of the equine veterinary trade, attempt to inform, enlighten, or terrify horse owners everywhere into funding a Kickstarter campaign to mass-produce Kevlar-coated, bubble-wrap-lined equine products.
And we welcome to the show this morning, Dr. Liz Barrett. And Dr. Barrett is, she's one of those Canadians from Prince Edward Island. We have a lot of Canadian listeners, Dr. Barrett. And finished your internship at Haggard in 2009, but you've pretty much been doing sport horse stuff since, I think you did a surgical residency at Auburn, right? And then now you're on the sport horse team at Haggard's.
Yep. I do mostly lameness work in sport horses, show horses, and then I stay up all night doing emergency surgeries.
Oh my gosh!
You have nothing better to do, no life. So I
the best of both worlds. Yeah, I'll work all day, work all
exactly.
night. Why not? Oh my gosh! Well, I think if I had ever been a vet, I would have wanted to do exactly what you're doing, minus the surgical part. But the sport horse stuff is so cool. And what a great place to have that opportunity. I mean, Kentucky, would you say that you deal more with race horses or performance horses, like show horses?
Oh, probably 90% performance horses, show horses. And
really?
The cool thing about Kentucky is that horses come from everywhere, all over the world. You know, that ship in to show at either, you know, whatever big event we have over at the horse park, or even, you know, some of the local shows that are probably smaller and more regular for us are still pretty big for people from all over North America. So.
Well, that's awesome. Well, no shortage of ways to practice. So I wanted to start out with just asking you, as far as lameness goes, what are some of the most common causes of lameness?
In vet school, probably the first thing they teach you is, you know, 70% of lameness comes from a horse's forelimb. And of that, the majority of them are down in the foot. So the old saying, no foot, no horse, has a lot of truth to it.
So we've got mostly the front leg, usually in the foot, huh? And what are some of those, what are some of the lamenesses you would see up there?
Oh, it can be as basic as just foot soreness. So, you know, our horses are kept in unnatural conditions. They're not just trucking around out in the plains all day, which would normally kind of strengthen their foot and strengthen their sole. Because we keep them, you know, inside a lot of times or in much smaller paddocks, their feet can just get soft. So they get bruises. Their feet don't hold up when we go to ride them. So that's why, you know, we've developed the whole trade of farrier and horseshoeing. So that's probably one of the most common. And then I'm sure everyone's heard of navicular syndrome or caudal heel pain is kind of the in vogue term we use now. And there's hundreds of different things that can involve, a bunch of different soft tissue structures back there, the navicular bone itself, the coffin joint, navicular bursa. So all kinds of things that can happen there. And then just sort of basic, you know, foot abscess, things like that are definitely the most common things that we see.
Now, you mentioned abscesses. I know that those are very, very common and very dramatic. What are some ways to prevent an abscess, or can you prevent it? Is it just bad luck?
Yeah, I think it's like colic. I'd be a millionaire if I knew how to prevent those. You know, obviously just keeping good husbandry can help, you know, but I don't want to say that people who don't pick out the horse's feet, they'll get abscesses, because that's not the case at all. But that's certainly how you can reduce the risk of them, keeping their feet dry in appropriate conditions like that. Yes, keeping their feet picked out, keeping them trimmed, you know, when they get too long, that puts extra pressure points, so they can get bruising, and that can lead to abscesses. Horses that are have metabolic syndrome, so that are overweight, they have changes in their feet that make them a little bit more susceptible to getting abscesses and things like that. So just maintaining basic health is a good place to start anyway.
Gotcha. So I'm sure that you probably do a lot of pre-purchase exams in your practice.
Yeah, we do a lot of them.
Okay, so what are some of the worst issues that you can see or have seen in a pre-purchase exam? Because I have a follow-up question too, so we'll start with that one.
Pre-purchase exams can either be, you know, one of the most satisfying part of your job because, you know, you look at a horse for a client of yours and then it's a partner for them that they get to keep and then you get to follow for the, you know, duration of their relationship together in their career. And those are kind of my favorite ones, or they can be stressful situations for the veterinarian, depending on what the horse showed.
I got a question. Can you tell the minute you walk in and you start finding the little things, can you tell the owners, you know, 5-10 minutes into it, is just not going to listen to me no matter what I say? Not the owner, the prospective buyer is just so in love with this horse that they're not going to listen to what you say no matter what you say.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I thought so.
And then I just very carefully write down everything I said so that 6 months from now they can remember what it was that I
said. Yeah, when they come back to you and say, this horse is lame. You didn't tell me the horse was going to be lame because they never heard that part. Yeah,
I thought you were going to ask 10 minutes in if you know that the seller knows that all these issues are
there.
Well,
there's another good question. Can you tell when the seller knows and they're just pulling one over?
Some people are not as good actors as other people.
That yes, would be the answer to that.
Wow, I had no idea that he was fully rotated in the right front. Like I had no idea. It's weird.
I had no idea. He just had colic surgery. Forget those stitches. They're nothing. There's nothing.
Well, the thing about horses, too, is that like me, if I'm walking around, I'm probably a little bit lame on a good day, but I can still perform the duties that I need to do, no problem. And there's a lot of horses that go out and do their jobs for their owners happy and willingly. But when you come and look at them with a fine-toothed comb, they have problems. And for those owners, you know, I understand why they don't know, because they're using the horse and the horse is fine. But when I look at it and assess it, there are issues there that I obviously have to present to a future buyer. And if it's a risk they don't want to take, then, you know, a lot of times they'll walk away from a horse that's working and being used fine, but they want to make sure it's going to be a long-term horse for them.
Oh, those
are the toughest situations for
that
me.
That leads to another question. Are there statistics on how many horses actually pass pre-purchase exams?
There probably are. There are certainly statistics on, there's a really cool machine that was invented not too long ago. I don't know if I talked about it before, called the Lameness Locator. And you put 3 sensors on the horse, one on their head, one on the rump, and one on their right forelimb. And it tells you if the horse is sound or lame and what limb it's lame on. It doesn't tell you what part of the limb or anything like that. And so there's studies that they've done where they just looked at a bunch of normal horses that were competing and doing fine. And to be honest, I don't remember the exact numbers, but there's certainly a large number of them that have a lameness that would be picked up by this machine, but the horse is still competing and I guess you'd say serviceably sound.
Well, that's the same with humans, right? I mean, there's a large percentage of us are lame in one form or another, mentally or physically.
No.
Watch me stand up after sitting down for a little while. Be like, oh, she would fail a pre-purchase in a minute. It's interesting because
I would for sure.
We had a pre-purchase done here at the farm yesterday, and I'll talk more about that coming up. But that was why I was asking some of the worst issues you will see, because I wanted to ask, what are some of the most forgivable issues or treatable issues that you have seen in a pre-purchase?
I guess for me, forgivable issues are ones that the potential buyer has dealt with before or can deal with and doesn't mind. And a horse that's already performing and competing at a level that, say, the future buyer wants to be able to compete at. Mm-hmm. So if I have a really nice children amateur hunter, they go around 3'6", they win all their classes, but I know it has a little bit of, say, arthritis in its distal hock joints. The people, you know, that are selling the horse are open about this. They say, this is what we've dealt with. This is how we've dealt with it. I haven't had an issue. And if the radiographs that I take kind of correlate and make sense with what they're saying, then I tell that to the potential buyer. Look, they've been upfront. This is what they've done. They've managed it. This is the perfect horse for you to, you know, move up to this level on. And it's issues like that I'm happy to deal with.
Okay.
Issues that I'm not happy to deal with is you know, say it's a young horse and I x-ray it, it has like a cyst that is in the joint. Those are things that can kind of explode one day. They're not an issue until they're an issue. And then when they are an issue, the horse can't be ridden. It's a real problem.
Right, right, right.
And so that's something that you can't waver on. You can't say, this is something you can deal with.
Gotcha. So can you, a lot of times we'll hear the vets go, oh, he's grade one, grade two, lame, grade three. What do those mean?
Yeah. There's an association, the American Association of Equine Practitioners, that has basically made a scale to grade lameness. There's actually a couple of them. There's one that they commonly use in Europe that's quite a bit more detailed, has quite a bit more numbers, but I like to keep it simple. So I use the AAP one that's out of five. It's probably easier to start at a grade five out of five lameness is like a broken limb or a foot abscess. So they don't put any weight on the leg.
So non-weight bearing is the five.
That's a five. It's the worst possible one. And then a four is obvious at a walk, so they can put weight on it. But even at a walk, you can tell that they're quite lame and trying to get off of it. A grade three is you have to trot the horse. So you don't see that at a walk, but as soon as you trot it, even in a straight line, you can see that. Say they have a head bob, or their hip is dropping, or they're short striding, something like that. And then a grade two, it's you can see it at a trot, but you have to do something like lunge them or put a rider on them or turn them to the right to be able to see the lameness. It's not obvious in just a straight line. And like I would probably be somewhere between a grade two and a grade three lame most of the time.
We won't put you in a circle. We won't lunge you, Dr. Barry. Go ahead.
And don't make me carry anybody around. That's for sure. And then a grade one. Is kind of sometimes every once in a while you might see it. It's really inconsistent, probably only at a trot or maybe at a canter after they land after a fence, they swap leads behind or something like that. That's a grade one lameness. And then a zero is no observable lameness. And honestly, there's a lot of horses that are competing and going around doing just fine that someone might say has a grade one out of five lameness in a leg.
Okay.
But they compensate for it and they look just fine going around.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, I think I'm a grade two. What about you, Glenn? What grade are you?
What was the highest again?
You're with Barry. Last question before we let you go, Dr. Barrett, is, you know, one of the most common hoof things that we tend to see is thrush. Now, I know we had a listener question wanting to know if thrush can cause a horse to be lame.
First, thrush to cause a horse to be lame, it has to be pretty severe. If I see a sort of a mild lameness and I notice the thrush, then definitely I'll treat that. And I always treat it if I see it, because if it gets to a point, a really bad point, then it can cause a lameness and then it's very difficult to clear. But most times, if I see a pretty lame horse and just a mild case of thrush, I'm going to be looking for something else.
What do you treat it with? Thrush.
So environment for sure. Someone needs to pick that out, pick those feet out every day, maybe twice a day. The bedding needs to be, you know, if it's in a stall and it's standing on wet bedding, or if it's outside and it's been raining, it needs to come in and be in dry conditions. And then there's all kinds of over the counter, thrush buster, things like that.
No magic thing. Like basically, gotcha. What I've seen at the store, you're not like reinventing the wheel. You're saying like thrush buster.
Yeah.
Copper tops.
Yeah. And like the, you know, obviously if it's kind of nasty enough, a farrier can clean it up quite a bit for you, or the vet can, you know, get a hoof knife and clean out a bunch of it and then start treating it. Yeah.
Wonderful.
See, we have the thing down here in Florida. We got scratches we deal with, and also white line. Mm. And actually, my pony has both, because four white legs, of course, and has one hoof with the white line. And Jennifer is dealing with those. But scratches are pretty easy to handle. We use Dr. Rose's remedies on those, and it works pretty well. Boy, it's something that, you know, when you're wet as we are, you have things that we didn't have when we lived in the north.
We see a lot of horses that come back from the show season in Florida. We do get scratches here because we have a very wet spring for sure. But a lot of horses that come back from Florida with with some issues for scratches. Haggard's has a great product to treat those as well.
Huh, there you go. Cool.
Well, if your horse has scratches, Haggard.com is where you need to go to find out more. Dr. Barrett, thank you so much for joining us and giving us a breakdown on lameness. I know it's a big part of your day and you probably didn't want to talk about it any extra. So we do appreciate it.
Well, we already determined she didn't have a life, so why not just talk to us? I mean, we already...
I didn't say that. He said that.
It's Haggard.com. HAGYARD. Thanks a bunch.
Haggard.com. Thank you.
Okay. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. Glenn, don't be rude to the vet. Nice enough to come on here. You don't have a life.
Well, she's the one that said it. I didn't. I feel bad for her. I was feeling bad for her. It's like, jeesh.
My gosh, I know. You sleep. I was like, who needs a life when you just need sleep?
Well, all right, let's hear more about Haggard and then we'll be back with more. We got to hear from you about that situation you just mentioned. And also, we have a little bit of history for you today. We have some news, some lists, all kinds of things going on.
Haggard Equine Medical Institute in Lexington, Kentucky and Wellington, Florida has been treating racehorses, sport horses, and beloved pasture ornaments for 140 years. With some 30 ambulatory doctors, 24-hour emergency care, full surgical suite, dedicated sport horse facility, wide range of proven therapies, and full-service pharmacy, Haggard offers everything your horse needs for the proper diagnosis and best treatment. Visit Haggard.com for more information, or you can call them at 859-255-8741. Follow Haggard Equine Medical Institute on Facebook or on Twitter, at Haggard, and receive health alerts and the latest information on keeping your horse healthy and happy.
You're no good.
Jerry, you're no good.
And I'm an official HRN auditor. I love the programming that the Horse Radio Network offers and have chosen to support them through a monthly contribution. If you enjoy listening to any of the Horse Radio Network shows, won't you join us as a member of the HRN auditor family? You can do it for as little as a dollar a month. Just go to horseradionetwork.com and click on the HRN auditor banner. And don't forget, as an auditor, we get the blooper reel.
Well, that was Templeton Thompson. You can find all of her music at templetonthompson.com. Well, we are brought to you today by Back on Track Products, and you can find all of their great products at backontrackproducts.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I'm Glenda Geek here with Jamie Jennings and Coach Jen. And if you listened on Monday, you'll know that Jamie was shopping for a horse for one of her clients and found one, and they were having it on trial. Any update on that?
So, you know, horse sellers, I get a text. This girl, she's 14. The horse is just wonderful. She loves him. And I get a text from the seller. Hey, I know this is weird, but like, you know, I just got a call from the person that tried him last week and they want to buy him. And I was like, okay. Well, that's great.
So the horse is at your client's house.
It's at my house.
Oh, it's at your house.
It's at my house on trial. And this girl calls me and says that the people from last week want to buy it. And I was like, okay. She was, I just feel like this is an awkward situation I've been put in. And
yeah,
I was like,
bit.
What? I said, why? I said, you know, and going back on this, rethinking it in my brain, it's a little different. But this woman is an attorney that is educated and smart and an educated attorney woman who owns the horse. So I said to her, I said, I understand that you want to get the horse sold, but I also feel like I shouldn't have to give you a lesson in integrity. And realizing she's a lawyer, I probably needed to, but like integrity would tell you that you've promised this horse for a week to a 14-year-old girl and you need to go back to those, you know, like, what are you going to do? Come get him? You know, you can't do that. Your name will be mud around here. Who you think you're kidding? So anyway, I said, I'll try to speed up the week of trying, but I feel like, you know, you made a promise and you need to stick with it. So
well, that's a tough one because as the seller, let me play devil's advocate here for a minute. In her position as a seller, you take the money when, you know, when somebody offers you the money, you take the money.
Well, you should have taken it. You know, you shouldn't have sent it out on trial.
Well, see, that was a mistake she made. If she knew that these other people were ready to make a commitment, or maybe they just said no to her and changed their mind. We don't know what that story was. Right?
That seems to be like what happened. Yeah. But I was like, it doesn't matter. I understand you want to sell, but you have.
Okay, so let's. This is another. Word. I love these moral dilemmas today.
I know.
So now let's switch the shoes. You have the horse. You showed it to me and I said no. I took it on trial or whatever. And then I said no. Then you're going to move on and show it to somebody else. But I come back and say, okay, I can give you cash tomorrow. But, or you have to wait another week for a maybe. You know, what do you do?
There's no, that's not a moral dilemma. That's, I mean, that's just keeping your word. Like,
nah,
that's
still
just
still
integrity.
A dilemma.
I told them they, I would call the people and say, hey, can we speed this trial up? Can you not make it a whole week? But I might, that's what I would do. But I gave the horse to a 14-year-old girl to try. I can't just take it. What am I to show up with my trailer and rip it out from under a 14-year-old? I don't think so. That would not, that's not me. But anyway,
I think I would have. Being the salesman, I would have tried to play them off each other a little bit. But I also would have said to the people that saw him previously, that called and said they wanted to buy him, I would have said he's out on trial. I'll know in 4 days.
That's the obvious, easy thing to say.
Yeah. And she might have said that. And the people said, well, I need to know. You know, they might have played hardball then, too. Everybody playing chicken makes this situation even worse.
Well, I just don't think there's any way around it. But anyway, so what we did is she's ridden the horse 3 times. And I just said, I actually had, because I had the vet coming out yesterday, I said, why don't we do a little minor pre-purchase? We already had a pre-purchase. Those people had done a pre-purchase on it and kind of like hemmed and hawed. And so we had the pre-purchase. We had all the x-rays. We had everything. So we just wanted to get a little bit of a lameness exam. And this is where asking about the pre-purchase is kind of what's forgivable or not. The horse has been in hard work 5 to 6 days a week for 9 months. And it had a little bit of a blemish on the hock. So my thing was like, okay, how bad is the blemish on the hock? And is it easily treatable? And, you know, I can't guarantee it's not going to pop up, but I also can't guarantee what I see is a horse that's currently in full work, more work than it will be in with this girl, and he's not lame. So that's why I was asking what's kind of forgivable.
And let's face it, every horse they look at, they find something.
There's always something.
Something.
I mean, there's no horse. They don't even issue pass fails anymore in pre-purchases.
These are the things that are wrong. You decide if you can live with that.
Yep, exactly. So we decided we could live with it because the horse is in full work. And here's the other part of it. So they buy the horse. They're so excited. And, you know, they talked about sending it to me for training. And I, you know, I'm out there with the girl and she's an advanced beginner with a 16-2 hand thoroughbred. Sending it to a trainer is not their answer. I just said, if you send this horse to a trainer, be it me or anybody, that's not going to help your daughter. So you've got a trained horse that your daughter can't ride. I said, but sending your horse back to that Western barn where she's the only one that sits in an English saddle kind of scares me too, because she doesn't know how to ride him. So I said, here's the deal. Board the horse here for a couple months. I ride at 6 a.m. every morning. I ride at 6 a.m. Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. I was like, show up at 6 and we'll ride together every morning.
See, that is the solution. So many times we're sending horses off to the trainers because the people, it's exactly what you talk about, all these moral dilemmas again. It's the people that can't ride that are the problem. The horse is trained. The people can't ride that horse. Sending the horse off is not solving the problem, although it makes a lot of trainers wealthy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You could send this horse to me for 3 months and I'll jump it around a 3-foot course, but that's not going to help the girl who doesn't.
And you're going to give them back the same trained horse that they still can't ride.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So I felt like I had come up with a pretty good solution.
That was a good solution, actually. Now, whether a teenager 14 wants to get up at 6 a.m. is another question.
Well, apparently she has no issues with it because her mother said she will be doing it. We're going to buy you this damn horse. You're going to get up in the morning and ride it, because I'm not riding post 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, right now, what I'll do as soon as our show's over is I'll run out there and try to ride since Chad's home. And I'll sweat and I won't be able to do much, and I'll probably just end up going on a trail ride. But on Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. That's when I'm like, whoever wants a lesson, you just show up on your horse at 6 a.m.
You know, the other thing you got where you live after having now been there last year is we have the advantage of even when we go out through the neighborhood and ride along the roads through the neighborhood, we have tons of trees. So half our ride or three quarters of our ride, depending on the route we take, is in shade.
Yeah.
You just don't have any shade. Nice. There's just no
shade. What's
that
like? That's the worst part about Arizona.
It's 117 and sunny. There's no shade.
There's no shade. There's no clouds. It's just brown desert everywhere. And so when you are trail riding, I mean, you're wearing those big visors and the hat and the sunglasses and sunscreen. You're slathered up and then you're sweating.
Oh, and you're going to want to listen to this week's Stable Scoop coming up because we had a lady who's kind of an expert on sunscreen and the ones to use. And she even names the chemicals that are in the ones that you shouldn't use and the ones that you should use. And that's all coming up at this week's Stable Scoop. So
I buy sunscreen from Trader Joe's. I feel like they're safe. but I will listen to that.
Not necessarily, because she said even the health food stores and the Whole Foods stores are selling sunscreen that have these ingredients that shouldn't be in it. So,
gosh, you know what? I woke up one morning and I realized, like, before I even start my day, I've ingested a massive amount of chemicals between putting on deodorant, brushing my teeth, and putting on sunscreen. I'm like, oh my God, I'm poisoning myself.
You know what? We add an additional poison to that here, and that's bug spray because mosquitoes.
Yeah. Gosh. So no wonder cancer rates are through the roof.
I often wondered, should I put the bug spray on first and the sunscreen over the bug spray, or do you put the sunscreen on first and then the bug spray over that? That
I know.
There's another moral dilemma for the day. I don't know which is right. I don't know.
You know what we should do? We should call Ray Parker Jr. Get him on the show and let's find out what
about
he's
moral
doing
dilemmas
and what
he's
he
had
thinks
a few.
About. Yeah. So we should just get his opinion. We'll just
we
call
need to
Ray.
Get him on the show. Quickly. Now that we've done all this, Ray's probably hasn't been asked to be on a Ray. And I don't think he's doing the song for the new movie.
No.
Ray, Jennifer, reach out to Ray Parker. He's probably free. So
we'll do. No problem.
Yeah. Okay.
And also, if you could talk to Thor, get him on the show.
Yeah.
Too.
See what you can do about Thor. Hey, we got still have a race. Any new news on this race nobody cares about Saturday?
Oh my gosh! I just saw this news story, and you're gonna die. I think this news story is karma at its best.
I know the one. Go ahead.
Apparently, after the Derby, a bunch of jerk-faced ticket buyers buy tons of Belmont tickets. Because if they buy the Belmont tickets,
they scalp them?
And then they scalp them if there is a potential for a Triple Crown. Well, I don't feel sorry for these people at all because I'm tired of overpaying for concert tickets or baseball.
You can't buy
tickets,
a concert ticket whatever. Anymore. Without
no.
going through a third party.
Well, we'll talk later about what I did at concert tickets for Coldplay. Oh, it hurt. Anyway, so we'll get to that in August when the show is. All right. So it says, despite one of the best racing cards of the year on tap for Saturday at Belmont, those who purchased tickets before the Preakness, hoping to see demand soar with Nyquist attempting a Triple Crown sweep, have instead been forced to offer their tickets at discounts far below face value. Oh, I feel so bad for them. As of Tuesday afternoon, 3,700 Belmont Saturday tickets were still available on StubHub.com. The $500 tickets, they were sold for $500 before the Preakness, are now being offered for $264. And they might not even actually sell them because apparently these are ones that have to be mailed to you. So they had to sell them by like today to even get them in the mail. The situation appears.
First of all, let's start with I would not pay $500 to go see the Belmont. I mean,
people have different money, Glenn.
I guess.
You know, that's the thing. So apparently, the people that are selling on eBay as well have no bids or very low bids, and they've been posting in their Belmont tickets for sale. This is one of them. This is where the cheering reaches a crescendo, somebody is saying about their seats. Another desperate soul offering up garden terrace spots is trying to lure potential buyers with the opportunity to, quote, go watch Nyquist for the Triple Crown in style. But, like, he's not running in it. And then another one says, this ticket comes... This ticket comes complete with access to betting windows and restrooms for the day.
So some tickets don't get restrooms? Is that what I'm hearing? You have to wear diapers?
I'm pretty sure all tickets get restrooms and betting windows, okay? So pay these poor people that tried to rob you and make a buck are getting a taste of their own medicine, and I don't feel bad about it at all unless one of our listeners is bought their ticket and wanted to go and then now can't. So
okay, I just pulled up eBay. You want to hear some of the prices on some of the tickets? $3.25 for four.
What?
And that ends today, that auction. Let's see here. No bids. I cannot find another one that actually has any bids. I can't find any other of the tickets that have any bids.
No, there's no there's no bids.
Sorry, you're out your money.
Yeah, you're screwed.
So I am right. It's the race that nobody cares about, pretty much is what we're talking about.
Well, I just find it amazing that, yeah, I mean, it kind of is. But I mean, I'm excited about it because I want to see if Exaggerator can go a mile and a half. Like, I'm excited, but I...
Would you pay $500 to see that, though? TV is so nice. It's at home. You have your snacks.
I paid a lot of money to see Coldplay, and they're going to play for hours. Not 2 minutes.
That's right.
Two and a half minutes.
Now, why anybody still pays to see Coldplay is beyond me. But
we'll talk about that. Some of us do, and some of us paid more than $500 a ticket.
What?
Sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
Does your husband know that? Does he actually go? Is he actually going?
Our wedding song was to Coldplay, Fix You.
So he has to go.
We both love Coldplay so much. And I had free tickets to go see Coldplay back in 2009, the last time they were in Phoenix. And no, it was the day after Thanksgiving, and he had to go to his family's place for Thanksgiving, and we missed Coldplay, and they haven't been back on tour since 2009.
Oh, he's paying for that now.
Oh, yeah, he's paying for it. I'm like, we had to go to your mother's house instead of go see the band. We ended up getting married to their song, and it's both of our favorite bands in the entire planet, and how dare you make me go to your family's? And we drove to Oklahoma. Really? Oklahoma to Phoenix, that long drive. I'm like, they're back in town. And pre-sale tickets are $624 a piece. And he was like,
where are you sitting? On the stage?
Pretty much. We got good. Like Chris Martin, if he walks by, he's gonna sweat on me.
I honest to God don't think I know we've been to a lot of concerts over the years. Not recently.
No, though. This is not at all. I would never do this, but Coldplay does not do US.
I don't think we've ever paid over $125 a ticket.
No, nobody. But you know what I thought of is that I have been to so many concerts and stood on the stage of so many concerts because of my radio career. Previous, when I used to go to concerts for free, that I figured this evens out all of those tickets I would have bought.
However you have to justify it, Jamie.
Yeah, I know. It's painful. It hurt. And Chad's like, you don't understand. We can't spend that kind of money. This is my first year as an airline pilot. We're making like 1/4 the income though. And I was like, I know. I'm sorry that Coldplay decided to come in concert this year, but you're paying for it. I told you the next time they come, I'm getting where Chris Martin will sweat on.
There is a major difference. And now we're totally off topic, but there's a major difference between males and females, men and women. Is women can hold a grudge for a hell of a lot longer than a guy ever. Oh. Women will hold a grudge for 20 years. Guys just beat the crap out of each other, and a week later, they're fine. And they've forgotten about it because they went through the effort to beat the crap out of each other. It's over. You guys will hold a grudge forever.
It's been eight years, you never forget. Every time a new Coldplay album comes out and they don't tour in the U.S., I'm like, remember that time that we had free tickets to go see Coldplay and we didn't go because we went to your mother's house?
Are all women that way? It seems to be.
Well, you know what? He'll remember when he gets that $1,300 bill on his credit card because I used his credit card.
$1,300. You could have bought another horse with that.
I realize that, but It's not the point.
You know,
I know.
They have,
I know.
It's they
stupid.
Have, you know, songs really on iTunes. You download them 99 cents.
So
you could have gotten their entire catalog for $49.
Oh my God. I know. It's really, as I'm talking about it, I'm sweating.
I'm trying to help.
But you know
that,
what? Like, it's
here.
Like a VIP access, and we get like a free poster and everything.
Oh, great. that's terrific. Which your son will take a Sharpie and mark up in about 10 minutes.
Well, we have two, because we have two VIP tickets, so he can draw on one. Nah, I got to pay a babysitter.
I want to be drinking beer with Coldplay after the show, if I'm paying that kind of money.
I was like, does a $600 ticket, do I get to make out with Chris Martin? Does my husband get to make out with Chris Martin? Sorry. Let's move on. Let's not talk about it. I'm actually sweating right now.
One news story here, and then I have a...
I wasn't even going to tell you about this.
Oh, man. One news story here before we go on to a segment I put together on horses in history. And that is, and this is for all our Canadian listeners, a little Canadian story. Captain Canada, who is Ian Miller, who has the record for being the most number of times at an Olympics in 2012. He hit his 10th time at an Olympics. This Olympics in Rio was supposed to be number 11, but his horse has come up lame. And the horse that he definitely had designated for this was a mount named Dixon, and underwent a pair of sinus surgeries since March and won't be able to compete in Rio. He said he's definitely out. He has only 2 months now to come up with another horse. He has another solid mount, but will need to do really, really well at the shows coming up at Spruce Meadows to be even considered for the team. So 10 Olympics in a row, and he might miss number 11 because of a horse. He doesn't have a horse.
Oh, my gosh.
How heartbreaking is that? He said, well, he'll be back in 2020 in Tokyo then for his 11th.
How old is he now?
69.
And he's like, I'll just catch the next one.
Just catch the next one. He's going to break. Not only will he have the record for the most Olympics, he's going to break that Japanese guy's record for the oldest in the Olympics if he comes next time. You know, he'll be right up there. It would be, because the Japanese guy, I think, was 72. So he's going to be right in that league of being the oldest and the most number of Olympics. But think about that. You've been to 11 Olympics. Nobody, I mean, you got to be in what, archery or shooting to even compete with that. There's no other sport you're going to be that old.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Well, I mean, pretty sad for him, but pretty cool that he's still out there doing it and still thinking about 2020. And maybe he'll pick up a horse. You never know. He might pick up a horse before then, too. I'm sure they want him there.
Somebody's going to give him a horse. Here, exactly. Just take mine.
Well, I had an opportunity. No Victoria today. She is out covering other events for horseandcountry.tv. And I love doing the horses and history segments. And we already played this one a staple scoop. So if you heard it before, then we'll talk to you again on Friday. Send your really bad ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. But I love doing these segments, but they take a lot of time to prepare, and that's why we don't do more of them than we do. But I wanted to do one, and I try and find the horses that you don't hear much about. And, you know, a lot of times you can cover old race horses, and there's been a lot written and a lot talked about with them. But I try and find things to talk about that you haven't heard a lot. And one of them, the one I'm going to play for you today that we did on Stable Scoop with Lena, was a horse named Old Bob. So let's take a listen and learn about Old Bob. Well, let's get into our horses in history segment. We're going back in time a little bit. Do you know a horse named Old Bob?
I have heard of Old Bob.
Well, you're going to hear a lot more about Old Bob. Old Bob was a horse that lived back in the 1860s, and he happened to be owned and was the family horse of Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, now, Abraham Lincoln was a big animal lover, you know.
Yes, we're going to talk about that, too. I have a little bit about his other animals.
Okay.
Lincoln owned several horses, apparently not all at once. Of course, you know, that's how you got around. So he owned Tom, Bell, Old Buck, And it was a reddish brown horse named Robin, who they called Old Bob. Old Bob was real name was Robin, apparently. As best as historians can tell, he was probably a standardbred. Yeah. That's what they kind of guess he was. Standardbreds were very popular back then because they were at a smooth gait and it was easy to ride.
And they're awesome in general.
Right, exactly. And they had there were a ton of them back then. Gated horses were very popular during that time.
Well, they had to cover a lot of territory.
Yes. And of course, Lincoln, before he became president, was a lawyer and he used Old Bob to get around back in Illinois and Indiana. He was using Old Bob. And when he became president, he left Old Bob in Springfield, Illinois. He left him back home. And Lincoln went on to, you know, be president for a while. And Old Bob was just back at the house. He was in his teens then. Well, he brought Old Bob to D.C. On April 9th of 1865, Old Bob starred in the Union's victory parade after Lee surrendered. So after the surrender, these dates are important. On April 9th, 1865, Old Bob appears in a parade celebrating the victory, right?
Yep.
Well, he was described by many and during the parade as a splendid old horse of dark bay color with swelling nostrils and the eyes of an eagle. Does that mean he was just freaked out? I mean, swelling nostrils and eyes of an eagle means he was just freaked the hell out during the parade. That's what I get out of that.
Not a parade horse.
No. Well, Lincoln was shot on April 15th. You know, I forgot, you know, we all studied history and I've watched a million Civil War movies, but you forget how soon after the surrender Lincoln was shot. He had like no time to enjoy this victory, right?
Aww.
It was 2 weeks, you know, and Lincoln was shot. And then, of course, he died the next day. He was mourned at the nation's capital and then was taken by train back to Springfield, Illinois for the burial. In Springfield on May the 4th, Bob, who was 16 at the time, walked behind Lincoln's hearse. Now, they weren't doing the whole stirrup thing, the empty boot in the stirrup thing at that point. So, but he did walk behind Lincoln's hearse wearing a silver-trimmed mourning blanket, and he was led by the Reverend Henry Brown, who I'll talk about in a minute, who was African-American. Six black horses pulled the hearse, which was borrowed from the city of St. Louis. It was a $6,000 hearse. Now, that's in that day's dollars. So we're talking a $100,000 hearse here in today's money.
Wow.
It was a very fancy hearse. So I saw pictures of it. So that was pulled by six black horses with black plumes.
Oh, I love when they do the black. I love when they do the plumes.
And they still do that in England with the funerals over there.
Yeah.
I
know it's a funeral thingy, but.
Yeah. And the friend that we had her on this driving show over in England actually uses the horses with the black blankets, you know, covers and then the black plumes. But that's how they did it. And this procession, because they had already done the official mourning in D.C., this procession was to go to the gravesite. So, but apparently this horse, Old Bob, had become kind of a celebrity. And there were people running up to Old Bob during the funeral procession, trying to cut pieces of his tail off as souvenirs. So the funeral directors and the people involved in the funeral kept having to chase people away who were trying to cut pieces of Old Bob's tail off. No wonder he had his eyeballs like an eagle.
Yeah.
Now, Old Bob is commemorated in a statue of Lincoln and Old Bob that's at the homestead there in Illinois. And this was done by a New York-based studio called Studio EIS. And they apparently spent a lot of time studying old photos and the clothing he wore. And they studied actual skull shapes and things like that. They had a forensic scientist on staff to help them to get this statue correct.
Wow.
They also studied pictures of Old Bob and really spent a lot of time on this statue. And that statue can be seen there. It's a full-size statue. And Lincoln's in his top hat. Lincoln was 6'4" and wore a size 14 shoe.
What?
He was a big man. Yes, he was a big guy.
I knew he was extremely tall. I didn't realize he was that tall. I guess, yep. Duh.
And with that top hat, made him about 7 feet, you know? It's like...
Well, no wonder he did so well as president. Nobody would mess with that.
So he,
no, Abe.
Yeah, he... So old Bob, did the funeral procession, and then he was made into a briar. You can get an old Bob briar, and he's wearing the black funeral garb. And that's still available. You can still find old Bob the briar. So I don't know what happened to old Bob. I wasn't able to find anything in my research about, you know, when he died or how long he lived or anything. Obviously, you know, notes were not taken as well back then, but, you know, I'm sure if I dug far enough and into some books and documents, we could probably figure out what happened to old Bob. If anybody knows, let us know what happened to old Bob, and we'll give an update to the story. The Reverend Henry Brown, who was an African-American who led old Bob during the funeral ceremony, was a Methodist Episcopal preacher. I can't talk today.
Say that five times fast.
And he apparently worked in various capacities for Abraham Lincoln, not a slave. Abraham Lincoln never had owned a slave in his life. He actually was a paid employee for the Abraham Lincoln family, and took care of Lincoln's family horse and led that horse in the procession. But he was also well known for being involved in the Underground Railroad. And this was what was said in his obituary, in the obituary of Reverend Henry Brown. Many a poor slave escaping by means of the Underground Railway during the Civil War was helped on his way by Mr. Brown, who acted as a conductor at the Quincy and Springfield stations. His idea of golden rule was illustrated by one instance where he gave his own coat and vest to a poor fellow who was without one. Brown was a native of Raleigh, North Carolina, and arrived in Springfield in 1847. He remained a resident except for a couple of years, and then was buried there in Springfield, Illinois, and had been a friend of the Lincoln families for years. I thought that was an interesting side story to that. Now, Lincoln, as you mentioned earlier, was a big animal lover.
Yeah.
Apparently, he was a huge cat guy. Loved cats. Matter of fact, Mary Todd was asked for a newspaper article, was asked if her husband had a hobby, and Mary Todd Lincoln said, yes, cats. So, now, you got to remember, Mary Todd Lincoln was a little nutty. She had some serious mental issues.
I did not know that.
Oh, yes. Did you ever watch the movie Lincoln?
No.
Was put out recently. You need to watch that. That was an excellent movie.
Okay.
Well, the Civil War is drawing, you know, to the end, and Lincoln was out visiting the troops, and he noticed three stray kittens in a telegraph hut. And apparently he picked them up and placing them in his lap. He was cuddling them and everything. And he asked the people about the mom. And when he learned the kitten's mother was dead, he made sure the kittens would be fed and had a good home before he would leave.
Oh.
So, you know, he was really he was a cat guy. Well, everybody knows the story about Lincoln and the turkeys. That his kids came in to a meeting one time. They had a turkey that they were going to have for Thanksgiving dinner, which Lincoln started, by the way, Thanksgiving. And Lincoln's son named...
Like, we didn't have enough reasons to love the guy. He just keeps getting better and better.
Well, he had this turkey that was going to become lunch, right? And apparently Lincoln's son interrupted a meeting and had named this turkey Tom. And pleaded with the father.
I love that Bob the horse. I know, Tom the turkey.
And that's where the term Tom Turkey came from. Yep. Well, they pleaded with Dad to give him a stay of execution, and apparently he took time out of his cabinet meeting to issue an order of reprieve, sparing the turkey's life. And that's how it. Today, the president still spare a turkey every year. Now, we eat the other 10 million, but we spare the one anyway.
I love this because I think that it's, I don't know, Abraham Lincoln really helped shape the future of our country during his time.
In a lot of ways.
In so many different ways. I mean, we moved ahead leaps and bounds because of him. And I love the fact that compassion was the fuel for his engine.
Well, that also extended to dogs. He had a dog named Fido, who was a mixed breed and apparently had floppy ears and a yellow coat. He's probably a lab of some sort. And apparently when the fireworks and cannons went off at Lincoln's victory at in his election in 1860, Fido was terrified. And it's because he was so terrified, he wanted to get him kind of out of town, away from all the noise. So he had two people named John and Frank Roll were neighborhood boys who promised to take care of Fido. And his real name was Fido. Yes. He told the boys, apparently, this was the rules. They were to let Fido inside the house whenever he scratched the front door. They were never to scold Fido for entering the house with muddy paws and to feed him if he came to the dinner table.
Oh, my God.
And Fido, I didn't know this, is Latin for the word fidelitas, which translates to faithful.
Or loyal.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. President Lincoln, I wish you were still alive.
Now we're not done yet.
But I would write him a letter. And you know what? I'm not going to say how old I am. I'm so many years old, and I would write President Lincoln a letter, and I would be, even at my age, my advanced years, I would wait by my mailbox every day for his reply.
Well, he also, that wasn't it. This place, the White House was a zoo back then. He apparently,
back then.
yeah, exactly. It's just not with animals anymore. Apparently, there were also two goats on the property, Nanny and Nanko.
Oh, my God. This just keeps getting better.
And apparently the kids, Tad and Willie, like to hitch the goats to carts or to kitchen chairs and have the goats pull them through the White House, inside the White House. Danny and Nanko both like to chew things. And apparently they got in trouble for chewing up the flowers and also for chewing the bulbs that were planted by the White House gardener. So the gardener apparently was known to chase the goats around the White House because they kept eating everything.
All right. Well, I mean, come on. Those of us with goats have known. We know that's...
The Lincolns also had rabbits and many cats. They're not sure how many cats, but apparently there were quite a few cats in there with the goats and the dog and, you know, turkeys and stuff. So that was the story of Abraham Lincoln and all of his animals, including Old Bob. Well, I hope you enjoyed learning a little bit about Old Bob and Lincoln's pets. I enjoyed researching it and finding all the information and the old stories about it. It was really cool.
Very, very cool. That's interesting. And I started Googling trying to find out what happened to Old Bob, too. I was like, what happened to Old Bob?
Did you find it? I could not find what ended up where he was buried or when he died.
I found this weirdus.com. What year was... Old Bob.
1860s or something, you know, somewhere in there.
So there's a non-human buried in Sanford's Lakeview Cemetery, and it's a horse named Old Bob. It says this is the horse that pulled the hearse, and it was Bob that carried most of the humans in this cemetery on their final ride. So I don't know.
A different Old Bob. Yeah,
it must be a different Old Bob. There must have been a lot of Old Bobs.
Yeah, I was just wondering. I really tried to dig and find out what happened to him after, but pretty much the story stopped after Lincoln's buried. So. I didn't have, if anybody knows what happened to Old Bob, let us know.
He's in the backyard. He's in somebody's backyard. Right,
yeah,
now.
That's right. Head on over to Horses in the Morning and post it there. We would love to know the answer. Well, thank you everybody for joining us today. We really appreciate it. Thank you to Back on Track Products for being our title sponsor. And thank you to all of our auditors for helping to keep this boat rolling as or boat rolling boat
floating.
Thank you. Jennifer, I forgot to mention that I wanted to mention that. Jennifer just typed here, there's a briar horse for Old Bob.
Yeah, you said that in the interview.
Did I? Okay, yeah, I just wanted to make sure that, do you have Old Bob?
I don't, because I just collect racehorses, but I've got the old horse, the one that has the hat on.
Oh, yeah.
Old Timer, I think, is what it's called.
What was the first Briar? Do you know?
Maybe Old Timer needs an Old Bob.
We got to get the Briar people back on. It's been so long since we talked about Briars, but I wonder what the first Briar was. Yeah, look that up. There's a horse. It's an history segment. The first Briar. Well, thank you again, everybody. Get your ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com and get them in before Friday. We'll announce on Friday what the prize is for this month as well. And I'm thinking that I have a lot of crap right now, just saying. So I'm sure that might be part of it.
All right, cool. Everybody have a great day. Spay, neuter, geld. Talk to you on Friday.
$600 a ticket.
Hey, don't judge.
Of course. That's crowns. You can put that right in the documents. $600. Cool.
And I told Chad 600. He's like, oh, that's not so bad. I was like, no, each.